Welcome, everyone, to episode number 82 of Underserved. With me today is Naresh Pillai, co-founder of OpineWorks. Let's get started.
Welcome to this week's edition of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry, where we focus on stories of tech industry leaders, their insights, and their lessons learned. And now, your host, Andrew Jalina.
Naresh, thank you so much for joining us today on Underserved.
Thanks, Andrew, for having me here.
So way back when, like when you were a kid, where you grew up, was there much technology around?
Yeah, actually, like when I was in the schooling, right? So that time technology or computers was like not anywhere, right? So I haven't seen any computers in my school life. So after completing my schooling, when I got into my college, that is where the first time I have seen computers. And that actually created curiosity into computers.
Now, were you programming then or like doing spreadsheets? Like what was your first interaction?
Yeah, the first interaction was normally just like, you know, the spreadsheet, MS Office, even the basics of Windows and I think Windows 3.1.1 or something. So those were some of the basic stuff. It was not at all programming. Once I joined my college, that time I could not get enough score to get me to an engineering college. So the score which I got me into Bachelor of Statistics.
What school was that?
Maharaja Sayajirao University of Baroda. Actually, like, it doesn't have many big colleges. This is one of the well-known college in the place where I grew up. It's Vadodara, state of Gujarat, western part of India. It was a good college. I got into MBSC statistics, got access to some of the computers. Nearby, there was an institute. So that curiosity took me to join a private institute along with my graduation. That is where I think I learned some of the MS Office, Windows Basic, and then even some of the programming language. It's Foxtrot at that time. So Foxtrot has its own databases and everything. So, you know, query languages and everything. So that is where I kind of started into computers.
All right. Do you do any C programming or like web stuff at the time?
The web stuff was totally not there. Definitely C, C++ was there. Even in the college, right? That time there was like a tool for statistics. That is what we used to use. Not really like, you know, going through C, C++. But I did some basic C language around that time.
What was the name of the tool you were using for statistics?
MATLAB. That's a statistical tool. Yeah.
Yep. We're familiar.
Yeah. So that was really interesting. That kept me going. And I was doing very well in colleges, right? So school life was different. My college, I was different. I was probably one of the top performers in the college, getting good scores. But still, I was more inclined towards getting into computers and, you know, doing some degree over there.
You, on your own, start working with a private institute, learning some HTML, CGI, and so on. What's your first job end up being?
So that came in a later part of the career, right? So when I completed this private institute, it was not at all web. But then I was not really interested in completing my statistics master. So I gave up my master in statistics halfway, a dropout, I would say, of masters. And actually, like, I joined another institute where I started learning Java. That time, actually, Java was more popular, HTML and all those things, which took me to my first job at Ultra Infotech. That is where I joined them. It was not a formal interviews and everything. Since they knew me via reference, it was easy for me to get into IT startup at that time. So I joined them on the field, or I started learning more of JSP, CGI, Perl, all those new technologies. I still remember the day when I joined Ultra Infotech. The first day I went to the office and my boss, he asked me, do you know like a Macromedia Fireworks? I said, yeah, I can do something out of it. Okay, what do you want me to do? And he said, can you just create some website template? I said, okay, let me give it a try. I still remember it was a website for a radiator, right? So in the automobiles, there's a radiator. So these guys were like manufacturing radiators. So that was the task assigned to me on that particular day. And I was like, let me read all the help. And I started building some kind of a template. At the end of the day, I was able to create one template. And like, surprisingly, my boss was like, okay, you did only one template. Probably you should have done like 2 to 3 templates. I said, like, this is something I started, but it was really well. First day was really challenging, and I think after that everything was like daily new learnings, so it kept on going.
Was that the first time you ran into build and release?
Yeah, that was the first time I ran into build and release, because definitely in the private institute, we never did any kind of a practical stuff, right? So this was really a practical stuff. I still remember, like, it was a little curious. Okay, how come a person from here sitting in India actually doing all the releases in a server which was like in the United States, right? At that time, the best thing what we can do is you can bundle it in a zip, you upload it, and then go and execute the command over there, and it just runs. So it was not a very big team. We were like 4 to 5 people. One of them was like a Linux administrator. He knew much about it. So he used to do it for us, but then we used to give all the development artifacts to him. And that's how it was being done at that time.
You had to do some Visual Basic back then too, right?
That's a new project which this company got, right? And there was a local client who wanted to build some standalone application for his daily management. So that was a task which was assigned to me and one of my colleagues. So, we separated out the work. First time, Visual Basic. Okay, standalone Visual Basic. And I started reading about it, creating screens, writing code into it, making it live and all this thing. And every few changes has been done, then we go back to the client and start showing him, okay, this is how it works. And honestly, it was a little challenging because we were learning. At the same time, the requirements was like every day changing, okay? So it was like always a running target and we used to chase it. Sometimes it was a little frustrating, but at the same time, did give me like a lot of things to learn, right? Because how do I make this work, right? So it was really challenging. And we did deliver it, which the client used it, but it was a good journey, I would say.
Yeah, there's that fine line between, okay, I'm getting to do lots of new interesting stuff and there's a new challenge every day, to these requirements never freeze. They're always slushy and I'm always changing something. Exactly. And it's like, I feel like I'm never done.
I think it, nowadays also it's the same thing, right? Even if a lot of process comes into picture, but still like things keep on changing.
Scope creep is alive and well. So you are starting to get to like a new phase of your life. Your wife is expecting. What's your kind of thought process there and moving on?
Yeah, it was almost like 2 years, I was going to finish at Ultra Infotech. My wife was expecting and we were excited at the same time, a little nervous. How would I manage, my family? I had a kid, right? And that is where things started changing. I still remember my boss of Ultra Infotech, right? He told, like, in India, normally it's in a Hindi language. What he told me is like, whoever comes to Earth, they come with their own luck. He did motivate me. And then I kind of also was inclined to actually get more salary so that I can make things work for my family. There was like some opportunities outside which I was looking around that time. And then that's how I landed up into my second job from there.
Now, you didn't have to give that super long notice period I've heard about in India, did you?
Yeah, that time it was not like in a formal organization with a 3 months notice period, not nowadays what we have. It's just like, you just tell them and, whatever is the mutual agreement, okay, you are okay to go after 2 weeks or 3 weeks. That is what it was. So it was not like a long wait getting to the next job.
Okay, so you land at another Infotech, Actax Infotech. What's this one like?
Yeah, so this Actax Infotech was again like, a different domain. One of my colleagues moved to this organization and whenever we chatted, he was talking about this organization, what they are doing. So I was more interested in joining them. Again, like, there was not a lot of IT industry or IT organization in Baroda. So I kind of went and did an interview with Actax Infotech. It was a bigger organization compared to Ultra Infotech. They were like almost 40 to 50 employees at that time. They had like multiple products. So it did interest me, and definitely the hike I got, that was something which I was looking for. So I joined Actax Infotech at that time.
So this is owned by a guy who's in the United States, but you guys are all in India writing US taxation software. I got to imagine there's quite a process to get that approved by the IRS.
Exactly. So he was an Indian guy, a CPA and settled in US. So he was running his own firm from US, but then he also had an idea of creating some of the accounting software, some of the online tax filing software, and those other things. And that is what, like, he had multiple products which was developed out of Actax Infotech. Definitely the product which I was involved into was filing a tax return online. So definitely domain expertise was not along with us. So we had a bunch of accounting professionals in the organization. They used to go through all the documentation, understand the logic, how the calculation happens, and then they give us all those formulas. And then we build that into a program which actually works it out, right? So that was my first experience about taxation. So again, like, you know, for United States, understanding what 1040N are and all those things was really, and I don't remember, but there are like a couple of lines, income, expense, or, you know, your gross income and all those things. So it was really good to actually understand all those things. Definitely, like as you mentioned, right, the challenging part is, okay, you can build something, then how do I get it approved? So that is where we learn how to go through that formal process of getting approved. We connected with the IRS, and then we have to send some test returns which they have formulated, and if all goes well, then they kind of approve your software for public use. So we tried, I think, 2 seasons. We went halfway, some of there, it kind of blocked. So we again repeated for the second season. And I think the third season we went through, we got all our 36 test returns approved, and we were like, you know, okay to do business. It was an extraordinary journey going through all this thing, learning by ourselves what we can do over there.
But then another friend of yours says, Naresh, you got to check out Pune.
Yeah, that's something which changed things, because I never wanted to move out of Baroda, because staying with my parents, my friends, you know, and my extended relatives, my wife's relatives were all in Baroda. So we never wanted to move out of Baroda, and we were in a comfort zone. But definitely, I had one of my college mate. He also joined Actex Infotech, and he was working with me. He did his master's from Pune colleges, and he was like always, okay, no, you should really check out Pune. And again, like, you know, not only Pune, he was also highlighting 2 organizations, which I remember. One was Canbay and another was Cognizant. So he was like, okay, you know, you need to get into this organization. They are really good. And I have heard a lot about it. So he was like always telling me about this, and this started going back in the mind, okay, you know, should I try it out? And even my wife was, okay, yeah, we can go ahead and try, because I see like a lot of other friends also moving out of Baroda and getting into bigger organizations. And that's where I kind of got curious and, you know, started looking for Pune.
You are listening to the Underserved Podcast. Underserved is produced by Syrinx, the developer-founded, developer-run software consulting company. For more information, visit syrinx.com. That's syrinx.com.
Your friend recommends a couple consultancies. You end up working for Canbay Consultants with Morgan Stanley as a client. What's that like?
Before I get into the organization, I'll tell you my experience on the way I went for an interview. It's kind of like, you know, I got a call from Canbay and they invited me for an interview. Definitely at that time, they were not really giving you any transport allowance or, you know, arrangements and everything. You have to do it by yourself. So I kind of booked a bus and I was actually going to Pune. On the way, it was like early morning, 7 o'clock, the bus broke down on one of the mountain range. The bus broke down there, and I don't know where to go. How do I reach my interview on time? So it was a little challenging. But the view of those mountain ranges in the morning, 7 o'clock, was extraordinary, because Baroda is like a plateau, right? There is no mountains. It's not surrounded by mountains. So this was like a completely different experience. I somehow managed to get some local support and reached the location for an interview. And in the interview, they had like written exam, and then after that, like technical interviews and everything. I think I did very well in that written test. So they asked me for a first interview, and the experience I shared with them, they were really impressed with it. Might be that was another reason they kind of selected me for the Canbay. So the day, I still remember how I landed up in Pune.
So you had to buy your own bus ticket. The bus breaks down. You have to scramble and get someone to still get you to Pune, and you make it to the interview and you get the job.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really a challenge to reach there, but then whatever you achieved was really great.
Well, you must have brought your own luck.
Yeah, exactly.
So you start working there. What's it like?
So I was working in an organization which was like small, 40, 50 people. And then suddenly going to an MNC, which has a big buildings. You know, the campus was really awesome. There were like a couple of thousands of employees working, multiple projects. So it was a complete different experience for me there. I joined one of the projects which was for Morgan Stanley at that time. So the technology stack was almost the same, which I used to work with Actex Infotech. There were definitely new things which I started learning there was like a Struts framework, which was used. Most of the things were like JavaScript. I see like a lot of heavy usage of JavaScript with the built using the OOPS concept. That's something which I really was initially finding challenge, but then I really liked it. Remaining as a tag library, servlets, and all those things was a technology. But again, like working for a bigger bank, like Morgan Stanley, was something a different experience because you interact with the folks in the US, clients talk to them on a daily basis. So definitely the first time when I interact with a US person, you know, I don't know how it will go, right? But then the experience talking to them on a daily basis, started understanding them really well, right? And then it made me a little comfortable. But then honestly, the few days or few months was not really very smooth enough for me to start.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like, so I speak a little bit of Spanish, but I can't imagine like actually having to use it in a work scenario and rely on it. That must have been kind of scary, like speaking English to these folks in the US for the first time.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
So you said you were working with JavaScript. This is like a long time ago before most of the frameworks were around, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if I now look at it, I would say like, wow, that was great, right? So they kind of created a lot of stuff using the JavaScript as an OOPS concept. You know, you click on this and then the other window, you state the change on the other window. You know, it was really a fun stuff, right? So definitely it was all before the framework came into picture.
So while you're there, another colleague says, hey, I'm going to the States. And what does that make you think?
Actually, I was very curious to go to United States, but not like really, okay, I want to go there and settle there. But I started seeing like, you know, within our team, there was a rotation. So every 4 months, one of the colleague goes to United States and then works there for 4 months and then comes back and then you get another person's opportunity. So I was also in the queue. I got my L1 stamped and I was waiting for my colleague to come back and then I kind of go to United States. That is the time when one of my colleague just before me who went, right? He landed up around February or March time where the H1 actually, the paper filing of H1 starts. So he was kind of looking at the opportunity. And I think by the time he finalized or decided, it was almost like May starting. He called me up and said, okay, no, Naresh, you want to go try H1 because I'm trying to do H1. I said, okay, no, I don't want to do it right now because I didn't really know what H1 is and how the whole process is. I said, once I am there, I'll probably decide. But then he was insisting, why don't you just give it a try? If it works out, it works. Otherwise, it's okay. So I said, okay, yeah, let me try it. And that time I had to run around to get all my papers documented and, you know, courier them to US. By the time the documents reached and then they posted to the USCIS, I got a news that the quota is completed and it was in the limbo status, right? So my consultant said, okay, we did drop our documents to the USCIS, but we don't know if your name will be in the, you know, will be coming within the quota. And I had to just like wait for a week or so. That was like little, okay, you know, fine, I can make it or not. It was in the limbo status.
Yeah, that's a scary time. You know, we've sponsored some folks on H-1Bs. We've transferred H-1Bs. We've helped people advance and get their green card and become citizens here. And for folks that grew up in the United States, you don't realize that folks coming from overseas, especially with the technical visas, the H-1Bs, it's a lottery system with a quota and you're entering and you're trying and hoping that you get chosen. And if they hit the quota, doesn't matter how good you are or how much someone needs you here and doesn't have anyone else that they can do the job with, you know, that's it. So you're hoping to get here. And then once you're here, you're hoping to keep your job and not get let go or laid off or something, because if you go out of status, you're going to end up having to leave. So it's a pretty stressful process, wouldn't you say?
Exactly. Yeah, I do agree to you because my experience in the United States, I've seen that. But luckily at that time, so I was able to make into the quota and I got my H-1 stamp. When I went for my H-1 stamping, they canceled my L-1. So the organization where I used to work, CanBay, they asked me to travel and I said, I cannot travel because I got my H-1 stamped and then L-1 is canceled. So I cannot use my visa and I have to leave now. So then in January, after serving my notice period, then I moved to United States.
And you first worked for Verizon Wireless in Seattle?
Actually, you know, when I landed in California. After a few months, I wanted to move out, but then they gave me another opportunity in Seattle. Everything was same, it's just like a different office. So I started working from Seattle.
I think you got to do like I-140 paperwork because you're going from one office to another now, and you got to get all that approved. Like every step of the way, it's a tough process.
Yeah, it's a process, but my consultants used to take care of those. So for me, definitely it was like, okay, I just landed a few months here in California, again, like shifting to a different state. But I had one of my friends in Seattle, so I was feeling comfortable to meet him because he was working with me in Pune. So that was one comfort zone. And again, like Verizon Wireless, where I was going to work, I had already worked with them remotely, right, from California. So it was not really a new project for me. So that also gave me a comfort to moving to Seattle.
How'd you like Bellevue in Seattle? It's definitely not that warm or sunny.
It's not warm, but I would definitely admit it's like a most scenic place I've ever seen, right? So it's completely greenery, waters, mountains. I think that's the first time I have ever seen a snow in my life. There's a Mount Rainier nearby. So I had gone to that place. Definitely that's a very mesmerizing place to be there. I remember like once, I think, so normally the place where I stayed, Bellevue, it doesn't really get snow, but I think one season they had really a good snow. Everywhere it was snow. So that was my first experience playing on snow.
Very cool. So you're at Verizon Wireless, you were in California, now you're in Washington, and you're working on like homegrown single sign-on stuff. Like, what do they have you doing?
So Verizon Wireless experience, I would say, was really great. I started doing some of the account maintenance project movement from like to a new Spring framework using messaging and everything, removing the dependency from the third-party vendors. Things were really going well with me. I started getting noticed by my director, and he was always looking at me for, you know, any new stuff. So any new project, any strategic project, I was always involved into. I got all the opportunity to work on any new technology which they wanted. A few of the examples was like they had a homegrown single sign-on when the users move from one application to another application. So we had to revamp them and start trying something out, right? So that time, Sun Access Manager was one of the products which was finalized. Definitely, I got an opportunity, studied how to make this work. A lot of support and things came along the way. I was able to kind of do the migration from a homegrown to a Access Manager single sign-on. So that's one of the stuff. Later on, again, like, you know, as I said, once things goes well, definitely you get more and more opportunities. So I was put into some of the new projects. We started from scratch to the production, like doing all the agile, using agile methodology, test-driven development, technologies like web services, which I started working there, SOAP-based, JX, WS, everything was like, you know, new for me. So it was really a great experience. I think that really boosted me more, and I started learning more and more.
But Verizon has a policy, if you've been here for 3 years, you got to go somewhere else for a little while if you're a consultant, the old co-employment dance. Yeah. So what'd you end up doing?
That was something, a bad news for me, but it's a policy. So my director, as I said, right, so I have been working with him. He was so much worried, and he didn't want me to leave Verizon. He tried, but I think the policy stays in place, right? So he kind of also wanted me to go to a different organization where he had a reference, join there, stay for a year, and then once the cool down period is completed, then you can come and join back Verizon Wireless. But since I was anyway moving out of Verizon, I wanted to go to a different place, which is hotter. Definitely, Seattle was a little cold and always gloomy weather, so I wanted to get into some hot places.
I am altering the scope of the project. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Excellent. Let the scope creep flow. Keep adding features.
To deploy the release,
deliver first, you must.
I find your lack of faith in change management disturbing.
Missing your deadline is the path to the dark side.
If you or someone you know manages software development projects, we can help. Call the offices of Syrinx Consulting. Syrinx provides software consultants who hit the ground running to help you deliver right away. Our toll-free number is 888-579-7469, option 1. Or you can live chat with Berg at Syrinx.com. That's SYRINX.com.
Syrinx is not a law office, and this is not legal advice. Offer valid only in the United States. Hablamos español, pero solo un poco y no tener ni pies ni cabeza. Saludos.
And so you meet the people at Syrinx, and we find you something in Dallas, Texas.
You know, so whatever I was wishing and, you know, I got it, I was really happy with it. But definitely when connecting with Srinik and then getting into the client, right? Azure ATX group at that time it was. So project over there was totally different. I had been working in web-based applications and all those things. This was totally new, connected vehicles. There is no web browser or anything, right? Just all devices, wires and everything. So it really made me more curious. I was a little nervous also. I don't know if I can make it, but I was really, really interested in getting into it.
So they were a client of ours, ATX. They were developing telematics systems, like everything from if your car crashes to call 911 to opening your car doors remotely to integrating with other systems. What sort of technology are you working with there, like when you're hands-on?
Yeah, so technology-wise, it was purely the same Java web services and all those things. But on top of it, there were like a couple of protocols they used to work with, right? Like we normally use with HTTP. That's the protocol on the web-based. But there, it was completely different communication channel, right? You have a short messaging, peer-to-peer, SMS, you know, all those things. And definitely each OEM had their own protocols. Everything was like bits and bytes, not like an XML or HTTP, which is human readable. So it's all like binary data. That was a little new for me. So, okay, I had colleagues who can just read it like an English language. And I was like, okay, wait, I cannot read this fast. I had to understand how this is kind of built, right? And I had to write some utility to actually break it and then give me what exactly the data means, right? So that was some completely different. And even communicating with the devices using the AT commands and everything, it was totally new for me. 6 months, I really had challenges. But then once I kind of got into space with these guys, then it was really easy. It was a great thing to learn.
They built some cool stuff. I remember Infinity was kind of ahead of their time. You could like integrate with your Google Calendar. What sort of other features were you working on?
So that was the first time I kind of started from scratch. They had a different protocol, which was totally new. And that is where when I started thinking, can I create it as a framework, right? Because definitely tomorrow, any other new OEM or anybody comes in, right? Why do we have to create everything from scratch, right? So kind of since I worked with Spring, so mostly wanted to make it more configurable, where you can make channels configuration, translation layer configurable, your outgoing configurable and everything. So I started reading about short messaging peer-to-peer, how it connects and doing some kind of a POC. And the features which came up with this, I am sure like now it's all open and available to cars. It's been almost more than a decade. So there were like Google Calendar. You can download your Google Calendar to your car. So you, when you're driving, you know what appointments it has. You can actually subscribe to a channel and it downloads all your news or things to your car. Any point of interest, if you want to know that, you just click on the point of interest, it gets downloaded to a car and then you just navigate to that point of interest. Definitely there were like basic features like emergency calling, information calls and all those things. Definitely this was something new which I have seen when I was working with Infinity.
I mean, they were way ahead of their time. Just now, like in my Tesla, like if I have an address on my maps on my phone, like being able to share that to the car, to me is mind-blowing. And the fact that they had that like almost a decade ago is crazy.
Yeah, exactly. So that time it was like in a development phase. After a few years, probably it was already available to the public to use it.
Now, you said you were doing AT commands. Are those like the ones you would send to a modem, but instead you're sending them to a car?
So definitely the modem was like built in the car. But then when I'm at my desk, all the modems are like on my desk, right? So we used to execute that command and we can see what the response it is giving back, right? So that's how we interact with the modem.
Then you had the itch to move back to India. What'd you do then?
Yeah, so I never wanted to stay in an United States forever. So since my parents were here, since I kind of stayed in Pune for a few years before I moved to United States, I started liking Pune and I wanted to go back to, you know, come back to India. So it was like almost like 5.5 years after my H1 tenure there. I reached out to my director in Ajero, at that time Ajero. So they gave me an opportunity to, you know, continue working from India if I'm okay with it. I was super excited, right? Because, okay, you know, I don't want to go and find my job in India again. It will be a smooth transition. So I took that opportunity. And then once I was back in India, definitely I worked for them for a couple of months.
And then what sort of opportunity opened up for you in India?
So while I was in United States, also the some of the things were lingering around, right? Trying to build something of my own and all these things. I still remember, like, you know, when I was in United States, definitely I used to get good amount of time, right? Because working in Ajero, it was like all offshore office. There was no on-site. So 6 o'clock office is done means done, right? So you have ample amount of time. So any new ideas which comes to my mind, even in the middle of the night, I used to search on Google. If I find something, I feel, oh my God, so it's already there. Let's not get into this. So I have done this like multiple times. So when I came back to India, so the option I was looking at is either I try to build something here of my own, a startup or something, or I get into a corporate organization and start building network, because which I was missing since I was working remotely. When I came back to Pune, I stayed in a different place, right? So that there was a disconnect. So I wanted to get into a corporate, either a build network or startup. So these were the two opportunities which I was looking at.
And so you chose a corporate network and work with Barclays?
So yes, so that's correct. So I got an opportunity from Barclays. Definitely is one of the prestigious bank. When I got an opportunity to work in banks, I didn't have a second thought and I just went ahead and joined Barclays.
And there you're kind of handling multiple projects and managing people a lot of the time. Are you still hands-on at all?
I kind of started taking a lead role in one of the portal which Barclays was having. Hands-on, purely having a team, looking at what all works can be delivered, connecting with the US counterpart, looking at what business opportunities or business things has to be delivered, making sure everything falls in place. So it was like, you know, a complete platform which was used by many, many applications within the Barclays. So it was a critical application. So it got an opportunity to work on this. Along with that portal, there was like a search platform, which I also was responsible for. I learned Endeca and Apache Solr Search. So when I mix all these things, right, working on a platform, learning new stuff, I started then working on some of the search platform, creating a platform which can be used by other divisions or other teams within the organization. Few years I continued the role, during which within Barclays, again, like from, I think it's true for all the banks, a lot of regulatory work or, you know, remediation work keeps on going. So as part of that, there was a big migration work from moving from an obsolete platform to a new platform. So, you know, moving this big application, monolithic application, to a new platform was a little challenging, which I took it up and was able to successfully get it delivered. So that completed my journey as an AVP. I got promoted to a VP after 4 years working with Barclays. At that time, my immediate two bosses left the organization. So I got this opportunity, as at the same time, I had to take up a big portfolio consisting of multiple applications with different website, public facing websites, to, you know, big data, you know, those kind of a technology. So that's how I started into more portfolio. Plus, you know, getting into people management, bigger team, resourcing, staffing, everything was like under my accountability now.
But after spending several years at a big bank, you still kind of have in the back of your head, I'd like to do a startup. So how do you come to OpineWorks?
Actually, I have a few of my friends like who are an entrepreneur. So when I talk to them, definitely, you know, they actually always, you know, inspire me, right, about, okay, entrepreneurship and everything. My dad is also an entrepreneur. So this is something really which was, again, like, you know, he started his entrepreneurship when I was in my first year of my college. And with this COVID stuff started, I got some ideas when I went to one of my friend to a restaurant post-COVID. I think the first wave, I was not feeling really comfortable, you know, interacting, because everybody was wearing masks and then, you know, eating outside, touching the menus and everything was little uncomfortable. And that's where this idea came about, creating a digital experience within the restaurant industry around that time.
So this is like the whole idea where customers can like scan and see the menu, and in the back office, like, you could manage all the orders and everything, but they don't have to buy some proprietary system. They could just use the devices they already own.
Exactly. So initially started with just a digital menu, like, okay, can I just show them a digital menu rather than asking them a paper menu, right? So that's how it started. since I was also reading technology, right? So what happened with the COVID situation, weekends were like, you know, I was getting ample amount of time because family demands were less, not going outside, staying home. So I made all those opportunity reading some of the UI technology like Flutter. I went through Flutter. I went to Amazon Web Services. I started getting into Angular, but somehow I didn't really find me getting very easily into Angular. So I started switching to React.js, and it was super easy for me. So then I wanted to try this digital menu using the React.js. So I used to do it at my free time. Whenever I get time, I used to build something, break it, build it, break it. That's how I used to do it. It kept on going. I started realizing that if I have to get into something, I have to do it. Otherwise, I cannot be just doing like, you know, during my part time or spare time. So that's where I started thinking about really seriously about, you know, opening a company and then building this product. I didn't do really the entire market research and everything, but it was just like, you know, I just flowed with my thoughts. And that's how the Opine Works came into picture.
That's cool. So your whole pitch to a restaurant is, hey, we can set you up in a day and you're up and running and you get all your menu items loaded and boom, you're taking orders.
Exactly. So the idea was like, okay, how would just like a digital menu will help, right? Customers should be able to order it. When they order it, where should it land? How does it work? So then it slowly started and the whole ecosystem idea came into picture. So right now, as you said, some of my restaurants, if they don't have computers or anything, they can easily start doing it on their phone. So it just takes me to set up a restaurant like in 10 minutes. Definitely it takes time based on the menu size and the format they have. If you have an Excel format, it's easy to load the entire menu into it. Otherwise, you know, if it is in a different format, then it has to be entered. I had clients or cafes, I would say, who were going to just start the next day morning, and then they call me. I said, okay, fine, we can get it set up. And then, you know, they were all set up and running, and they can use their mobile phone to take orders. You know, their entire operations was like going easily with the phone.
So there's a really good restaurant here called Bar Taco, and they make these little tacos that have all sorts of different fillings in them, like pork belly or sesame ribeye, or there's a vegetarian one or shrimp. And you go to the table, you scan the menu, and you just order right on your phone, and there's not really a waiter. There's more or a waitress. There's more like a server, and all of your stuff just starts showing up. It's the craziest thing. Is anyone doing that in India?
That's the idea which the product has, right? But definitely here in India, so you will have like a different mindset of people. There are restaurants who are like from a very traditional restaurants, which they have been running for years and years, right? They want their waiter to go to the customer and even talk about their menus and everything. So they just want to use a system where you don't want to give a digital experience to the customers, but they can use the management system, right? The captains can take the orders. There are restaurants who want to use complete digital. Okay, you know, you can do it from the table. Customers can order it. It goes to the kitchen. They just prepare it and serve it. Once they're done, they just pay it from the phone. So RestoDX has all those features. It's more of a configurable based on what the customer asks for. We build that based on that configuration.
All right. So I'm a big fan of Indian food, especially vegetarian Indian food. I love palak paneer and gobi and idli. What should I try that I haven't tried before?
So if you're a big fan of paneer, then you should try something. I don't know if you're a fan of red spicy curry or something.
Yep.
Yeah. So there are like a lot of like palak paneer is a green healthy, I would say. So if you want to really try something spicy, then try paneer kadai. Or if you have not tried some rice varieties, you should go for biryanis, because biryani is my favorite. I like. I guess you will eat like non-vegetarian. So the biryanis normally comes with non-vegetarian.
Yeah, with like big chunks of chicken in it.
Exactly.
Or something.
Yeah, you'll definitely love it.
All right. So when you're not at keyboard, what else are you into? I think you like riding your motorcycle around the countryside.
So this all started when I came to Pune, right? Because Pune is surrounded by all the Sahyadri mountain ranges. So there are a lot of scenic places where you can ride. So definitely my interest towards riding, hiking started in Pune. So I normally go out for a morning ride or a day ride. And then over the weekends, we even go for hiking, trekking, especially during the monsoon season, Pune changes a lot, right? So it's very amazing to see the greenery, waterfalls. And if you have to really be very close to the nature, then definitely you have to track or hike for a long distance to get that view.
That's cool. Do you have any stories where kind of you rode out in the middle of nowhere trying to find your way back, getting lost, anything like that?
Actually, that's it's always bound to happen, right? So I have like two stories around this. So one was like once we had just like without proper planning, me and wife, actually my wife is also interested in riding. She is a pillion rider, not riding the bike. That's a big job actually, you know, sitting on the back, doing nothing enough for longer distance. So we both went to throughout a state, a central state of India, which is Madhya Pradesh. So it was a 2-week ride. We started going around. The only option, or you know, the way we could figure it out is using the Google Maps everywhere. So Google Maps actually just takes you to some place where there is no roads at all. And then you are stuck right now. Where do I go? And then you don't find even people around to ask for. So somehow you have to go through, manage it and figure it out and then land up. So, you know, multiple times it had happened when I was going through that entire state. Somehow we figured out the you know, the place to get out, but it was like different experience.
And what was your other story around that?
Yeah, so the other story was definitely I had this motorbike which is heavy. So once it got just like, you know, flat tires, and it was like nowhere near to any shop. It was few kilometers away, and normally I was not even prepared for it. So then somehow, even with the flat tires, me and my wife were like, you know, riding on it, and like riding, and then halfway getting down, and then pushing it, and then we landed up found a shop who can actually fix it. So it was like, you know, again like in the hot summer days, it's completely sweated. There's another ride which I did with my wife. This is to Leh Ladakh, which is one of the highest motorable place. So this was like a totally a different ride, right? Because it's going through the terrains where you have the landslides, you know, everywhere. It was like a different experience. It was really challenging to go through some of the highest places because of the weather. If the weather is clear, then it is very easy to climb and come over it. But if the weather is really snowing and cold or raining, it becomes more dangerous. So I still remember a place where our team leader who used to lead us told us to, you know, think over if you want to proceed from here, you can proceed, but then there is no way to come back if anything happens, right? So think over it. And everybody were like looking at each other, the entire group. People were really afraid. But then somebody started saying, yes, we can do it. And then we all started riding the bike, went to the top. I really felt that sense of, okay, I have achieved something when I reached at the top. So that entire journey was really something very different. You know, it's a complete different place.
That reminds me of a story. My parents moved to New Mexico. My dad got into restoring old Vespa scooters. And he had these Vespas that he would wail around on, and he got involved in some club that wanted to go up Pikes Peak, like 14,000 feet high in Colorado. And yeah, that was their big thing, like riding these motorcycles and scooters all the way up to the top of mountains.
I think I have been to Pikes Peak. I think there's a tram also goes all the way up. Yeah, actually, our experience was different. When we took that tram, it stopped halfway. I don't know, it cannot move up. And then they brought us back down. And then we had to again go via the road. So both the experience, I was able to cover it.
You got to try both, but it wasn't your choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Naresh, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experiences with the listeners of Underserved.
Thanks, Andrew, for having me.
And we'll talk to everyone soon on the next episode of Underserved.
Thank you for listening to the Underserved podcast. For more information on the topics discussed and for show notes, visit the show website, underserved.fm. And please be sure to rate, like, and subscribe to Underserved on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.